Hi, and welcome to the Imperial MBA Women podcast. I'm Sam Bonner, and this week we're joined by Caroline Hyde, financial journalist and TV presenter for Bloomberg. I've been lucky to know Caroline for over 25 years. We were at school together before she went on to study PPE at Oxford and captain the ladies' rowing team. She then went on to Bloomberg and worked her way up to Anchor in the USA. You could call her the ultimate overachiever. But Caroline is one of the most hardworking and successful people I know, and I wanted to discuss with her the peaks and troughs of striving for success, including balancing a career with family, managing stress, perfectionism and fear of failure, and the importance of carving out time for yourself to prevent burnout. Hi, Caroline, and welcome to the podcast. If you're a high achiever, which lots of the students at Imperial, who is the main audience for this podcast, are, how do you stop yourself getting burnt out fundamentally? So lots of people have to manage ways to overcome perfectionism, manage stress, experience fear of failure, imposter syndrome, that kind of thing. So I really wanted to discuss, you know, how through your career and in your family life, like you keep on top of that and make sure that you've got time for yourself and that you don't burn out and do too much. So you've accomplished a lot in your career and personally. So I'm interested to start us off to find a little bit about your outlook or perspective on life. Like, so what drives you? You know, are you really competitive? Do you need to be busy? Are you aware of that? And is that something that you've always experienced or have you strived to cultivate?
Oh, the need to be busy. I think many people now are feeling this. Someone, I was reading Zadie Smith's book. She has put this wonderful little book out of sort of thoughts and memoirs during COVID and this sort of need to fill time. And I think I am someone who quite often feels that, you know, a morning of a weekend, I need to be up and out and doing something to feel that I've achieved. But what is it that you're actually achieving? Is it baking a cake or is it going out and having fresh air? You know, so I think there is an element of being busy that we all have to a large extent of filling time and feeling purposeful. But I think being competitive isn't it. I don't think I'm competitive for competition's sake. I think I've just knew from an early age, I really enjoyed people. I really enjoyed the news. My mother in particular was always listening to the news. And I sort of started me to reflect on why perhaps I got into this role and what it was that I enjoyed about it. And I think there is this like hunger to understand what's going on in the world and to be able to have the great fortune of being able to ask people in the know about things and have the audacity to expect an answer. So I think there's always been this desire to follow this career path. I knew very early on that I wanted to be something to do with news. I was desperate to be a news presenter, but had no idea that I'd managed to get there. But there was always this little burning desire to try it. And I think it was naivety to start it all off, like at school and then into university. I always just had quite a gung-ho, well, why not? I think there was an element in your youth that there's nothing to lose. Give it a go. Why not? Why wouldn't I be able to get there? And I think it's joyous naivety. And then you suddenly start to get a little bit older and realize what you do have to lose and the ramifications of where you've gotten and wanting to hold on to it. And that suddenly makes you aware of the competition that you speak of. And I think I hit that point in my late 20s, early 30s, where I suddenly had this false perception that others' success was somehow limiting yours, that the pie was only so big and other people doing well somehow meant that it was smaller for you. And that's something that I really feel quite joyously I've come out the other side of now, Sam, and feel that actually, other people's success is only going to add to yours. We can all lift each other up, particularly people of my age with young female, I can't call myself young still, but you know, middle-aged female news presenters can all lift each other up. And we're all not after the same thing. And we're all starting to get to a point in life where we understand what balance we really want and what life is really going to look like. Do you want to be in a rolling news channel where you can be called up any hour of any day to be put on air because that's the thrill and the excitement and being in that moment you enjoy? Or is it that you start to want a bit more of a routine and you like an anchor role and you enjoy knowing what your set hours are and really purposeful within that and the team mentality of building a show? But I've thoroughly enjoyed getting to where I have, not without my own issues of nervousness and naivety and then fear of falling and fear of failing. But I think I wish I could say I carved a path with great thought and went from one step to the next, knowing where I was going. But I think I always had this desire to get into the news. And I think at the beginning just had this gung-ho attitude that lent me to sending emails to Robert Peston back in like 2007 or 8, just on a whim, sending him what my thoughts were on the private equity market. And lo and behold, he actually replied, much to my amazement. But I sort of didn't, I think at the time, didn't think why he wouldn't reply. And then he did. And then I end up getting an internship with the BBC because I sort of speak to him about it. And looking back on it, I'm like, what was I doing? But then I think I wasn't thinking. I was just excited at every opportunity. And why wouldn't people want to now receive emails and be asked questions? And I think that's something I now try to really get, sort of pay it forward, as they say, of whenever anyone emails me or sends me a message, I try to like respond and give advice or offer a chat because someone did that for me once. But also never forget that when I feel insecure about asking people the level above me and the rung above that for advice or for steer or for just a coffee, and that insecurity gets me of like, what if they say no? Why would they want that? And then it's always my husband who says, well, how do you feel when someone asks you for advice or your opinion? I'm like, well, I feel great. It's like, well, then. So I don't think I got into this role for competition's sake. I think I've always been someone who likes to be busy, as you say, but I think many do. But I think I just always loved the industry. And at the time started along it through sheer naivety of, well, why not? And then as time went on, I've managed to convince myself that it's not competitive. It's now for the sheer enjoyment of it and working with the team that I do. It's now, it's just an awful lot of fun.
No, and actually I can really understand that sort of initial outlook of reaching out and emailing people, which looking back now maybe seems a bit sort of gung-ho or naive, but amazing. But that sense of, but why wouldn't they want to hear from me? And I find often that I take on stuff or I push for situations and I might think that it's quite normal, and it's only until maybe somebody else or I look back on it and I say, oh, actually, that's, you know, maybe not everybody makes that effort. That's why I kind of wanted to know about your perspective slightly, because I think if you're high achieving or you are interested in doing a lot or pushing the boundaries on what you're capable of doing, it's quite easy to take on too much without potentially thinking about the long term effectiveness. And I think there is a difference between someone who does it automatically and then someone who does it strategically, and when they realize that the balance is there or impacting them. So for example, when I started my MBA, I immediately volunteered to be one of the staff student chairs because everybody would want to do that, right? And then none of the other staff student chairs wanted to be on the Dean's Advisory Board. And I was like, but why not? It's so much fun. But then, of course, when it comes to writing your dissertation, then you've also got to do all the other admin stuff. It's weighing up, but I can't help myself. Do you know what I mean? So
I think that's great, though, because that's one of my biggest regrets was when I was at university. I didn't go and think about working in a radio station. And I didn't go and sort of quote unquote network as much as I could. I was busy being on doing sports and being team captains of things and wanting to do that. But I things that are actually really useful now and building, I think if I could do anything again, it'd be like learning about building networks and those sorts of roles really help that, I think, an awful lot of the time. And it might, and I suppose you also from a always need to understand how you balance probably doing one too many things.
That's quite interesting what you've said, that you did a lot of sports and probably more varied opportunities. That probably helped, especially at university, to build networks and reach out to people and those sort of initial management skills, potentially, if you're...
Hours. Because I was doing, I don't even remember, we were both in the same city and I was rowing, which I literally think I just took up rowing because my parents said, please don't take up rowing because we don't think it'll be very good for your back. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take up rowing. And so I'd be clambering on my bike at 4 a.m. to go out to this freezing cold river after having, you know, one too many cheap gin and tonics in a bar the night before. And I, lo and behold, ended up then going into a role where I had to get up at 2:30 a.m. every day for 6 or 7 years. And that was really good training. Yeah. and so actually I look back on it and think rowing did far better for me in terms of just the discipline of knowing what your body's capable of and the fear factor of sleep and really prioritizing sleep. And I think that certainly stood me in good stead. So yeah, I think there's nothing I wish I hadn't done back in my younger days. I think there's always things that I wish I could have done. And of course, that's the benefit of hindsight because I didn't really know that I was going to need expertise in presenting in a radio show or something like that. But it would have been quite one of those things that I wonder would have been a wonderful opportunity to start a little bit earlier.
And so moving on to our next question, which kind of links in, when someone's achieved a lot like yourself or is successful, it's often difficult to imagine that they experience any insecurities or self-doubt. I mean, do you have any sort of whisperings in the back of your mind? Like maybe it's not something that holds you back, but are there barriers that you need to overcome in your day-to-day work and specifically in your career?
I mean, first of all, I love always, I'm sure everyone has it, but this inner like, is she talking about me? That is so nice of you to say, as you know, that I'm deemed to have had any high achievement. So thank you. And I also will point out that as someone who does interviews for a living, I'm pretty hopeless at giving answers. And so bear with me, dear listener, when I go off in mighty tangents and don't give the short, terse answers that I usually desperate for my own interviewees to give. But I think I've actually been confronting this a lot recently because my husband, the most wonderfully optimistic, joyous person I could know, makes loads of New Year's resolutions. And he's always determined that I do it with him. And this year I was like, why don't I like doing this? I hate doing it. We always go out for this beginning of the year dinner where we're meant to, you know, the kids, a date night, but of course we don't do them at the moment, and have a glass of wine or two or three and talk about what we're going to do as our New Year's resolutions. We're meant to come to the table with them. And his list gets longer and longer and more like perspective. And mine is just like, oh, I hate this. And my New Year's resolution was to find out why I hated making New Year's resolutions. And I know what it is, and it's a fear of failure. It's a fear of putting that marker out there and not reaching it. Whereas my husband sees it as, well, you know, aim for the stars and hit a tree. Whereas I'm like, just don't aim anywhere and just see where one navigates naturally and then just be joyous when you've got there. And I feel that a little bit in my career in that I have sort of got places by, in hindsight, I like to think that I was terribly strategic, but joined Bloomberg because I knew there was a TV arm to it and then navigated myself from print journalism onto the TV. But I think an awful lot was sheer good luck. But I do think that I have this fear of failure and I'm trying to confront it now, particularly as you have these milestones, looking towards the age of 40 with children. Where is it that I've now achieved more than I ever thought I could? Like, I have the most enjoyable job I could ever imagine, anchoring a show with such fantastic other people. So I was sort of suddenly like, okay, I'm going to get a hold of this. I studied a coach actually this year, sort of a life stroke career coach. And it's been really rather wonderful. I've only had about 2 or 3 sessions, and I realize this sounds incredibly privileged, and it is. I'm able to, you know, put some resources aside to invest in myself, and not everyone can do that. But I think people can find their own ways of doing that, whether it's listening to more podcasts, whether it's about read. He pushes me to just ask myself questions and read books and find videos that inspire me. And I think a lot of it is self-work. It's just I needed the discipline of someone telling me to do that. But he's been really helping me think about what it is that I fear, what it is that I really admire in other people. And perhaps, so I've just created this list, for example, of people that I really admire, but certain attributes. And for example, like Maya Angelou is one of them, famous American writer, poet, you know, activist. What I admire about her is her real sense of self. I feel that she just understood herself and had this innate self-confidence. And I feel I lack that. I don't always understand really what I'm about. And he set me this challenge of writing, sort of finding 7 examples at least of people of exact memories of when you think someone else has seen you as self-confident and seen you as knowing what you're about. It's a really difficult exercise. You can find the first one or two, like maybe I could visualize my husband seeing me as self-confident at our wedding when I gave a speech, and but then keeping on building on it. And naturally it's just meant to just crack that inner, as you say, whispering that you don't have that, and that you can really start to retell the story to yourself that you do have that confidence, and that perhaps you are someone who has, you know, ambition, and you really admire ambition in others. And one of those times that you've been perceived as ambitious, and one of the times that you've been seen as cool thinking or level-headed or philanthropic. And so I definitely have, I think, a fear of failure. That's definitely what I've been trying to focus on and understand about myself.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting you're saying about maybe looking into yourself to find that additional self-confidence and bringing it forward, because it's so easy to pick up on the negatives and maybe be hard on yourself, but especially being English, different in other cultures, but to celebrate yourself and be like, actually, I did a really good job, kind of goes against a lot of what we would consider polite.
Well, you just start telling me, introducing me as a high achiever, and I'm inwardly cringing entirely. Whereas, you know, other cultures, you know, I live in America, a lot of them want to own that. And yes, I have got to this place because I've got myself up by my bootstraps. And I think, yeah, we need in Britain to learn to praise ourselves a little bit more and be thankful, but also be empowered by it and then spread it forward.
Absolutely. And what I've seen quite a number of times is that people who do sort of maybe slightly lack that self-confidence overcompensate by maybe doing more or pushing or, you know, doing those couple of extra hours behind the desk or working that little bit harder or going to prove, constantly having to prove that they're worthy of being in that situation.
Yes, imposter syndrome, big thing.
And which generally comes from maybe not recognizing, you know, the successes, but also you have to balance what many of us would consider, you know, a highly stressful job, being live on air most days and with all the variables that that could bring, and also family life. And as you just mentioned, you're living in New York. What do you do proactively to help you manage and like not burn yourself out? You know, do you have different coping mechanisms between like work and at home to help you manage?
Sport, always been one. Exercise, getting out and going for a run. And actually my husband and I try and carve out a time where I've always held up that to do the jobs, to all be full-time working women, you need support systems. My husband's a massive support system. He's a complete, you know, equal in terms of childcare and the like, but also having a nanny. The one we have here has been wonderful, and she comes at midday. My husband and I try and go for a run together each day, and it means that we get a chat and a time to talk together, but also get exercise. So I think exercise and endorphins has always been really important for me ever since you'll remember me when we were back at school together. I think I've always been motivated by that. Reading, I am a bit of an insomniac at times, and I've got through that through years of doing ridiculous hours of knowing I had to get up at 2 a.m. and therefore calming mechanisms of knowing that you can actually still do a decent day's work on 2 or 3 hours sleep. You know you can do it, so try not to worry. Just don't look at a clock in the middle of the night if you're awake, and just rest. Lie down, close your eyes and rest. But I've actually found of late this year I've been trying to read before I go to sleep, because there is that panic of, oh my goodness, it's midnight, oh my goodness, it's 1 a.m. and the kids are going to be waking up. And so reading's been really good. And I think for me, you know, my husband's very big on meditation. I've tried that, and sometimes it works. I'll go through Calm app, which I get free with my bank account, and it sometimes helps me just do some good breathing exercises, but I don't depend on it in the way that perhaps he does. But I think for me, that is it, sort of exercise, trying to be aware of sleep, trying to be aware of reading. And also when it comes to being with family, for example, because I think that's where a lot of my insecurity has been, is failing at both a mother and career, you know, not feeling I'm able to fully dedicate myself best to both. I think when I'm with my kids, I put my phone away, and I'm very good at putting my phone away and then not knowing where I've put it actually, but putting it away and being totally focused on them for that moment. And I think you could be that. I'm not talking to all people who have children, but when you just being totally focused on reading your book, being totally focused on making yourself a beautiful lunch, being totally focused on watching a good film, just unplugging from what you could otherwise be reading or focusing on from a work perspective, and being in that moment, I think, has helped.
Well, absolutely. And especially as so many people are currently having to work from home because of the pandemic, it's so easy not to carve out that time for yourself. So, you know, my laptop is in the same room where I eat and sit and watch some TV. So you could so easily just like check on your emails until 9 o'clock at night, and then you're never not working and you're never actually having time alone to yourself. So I think that's a really good point that you've raised around, if you're doing something for yourself, make sure that you just give it that focus and don't get distracted by other things, I think.
How do you do it then? Do you put your laptop somewhere else, or do you...
Yes, I'm very good at splitting everything up into different sections. So I don't have email alerts on my phone. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of notifications on my phone. Yes, I shut down my laptop and I put it away in a drawer. I changed the lighting in my apartment.
So very smart. That's a smart one.
It feels like I'm in a different space. And I have the same with you. I do struggle with meditation. I haven't managed to completely crack that, but I really enjoy yoga. I think it's because I'm physically doing something at the same time as that sort of more meditative thoughtfulness.
I shouldn't do that on a Sunday, actually, because I find Sunday blues, for whatever reason, as irrational as they are, Monday is no different from a Thursday, from a Friday. But Sunday blues, we try and do a yoga class. We try and eat early on a Sunday and do a yoga class, then have a glass of wine and watch The Crown or something. And actually, that yoga is very cool. I'm trying to get into that. I'm rubbish at it, but I'm trying to get into it.
Well, embracing something that you're not good at is a whole other podcast that we can talk about, I think, because you're so like focused. I am definitely on everything I do being really good at it.
Yeah.
And actually sometimes just taking a step back and being like, I'm going to fall over during my yoga session and I'm not going to worry about it. No one can see me anyway. So,
Sam, like when you you gave me the great honor of asking me to join this podcast, I thought to myself, Caroline, you know you're not very good at this. And I was like, but I really want to do it. And so sorry, everyone who has to listen to me learning as I do, and this not being my forte, but I do think it is sort of embracing different challenges and something that you're not inherently excellent at, but hopefully improving.
Absolutely. So you've successfully continued to develop your career alongside having a family, and you've discussed your children and also changing the types of jobs that you've had over the past couple of years. But do you think that it's changed your priorities or perspective, having children? Because if you've got to focus on something completely, I can imagine children are a great way to do that.
If you want a humbling experience, I think also that element of realizing what you've got to lose. And I suppose there's always that element of now wanting to succeed for them as well and give them everything you can and be that role model that my mother always was for me. And I thank her every day because she was always someone who said, I remember she was like, oh, Caroline, I knew from day one that I would be a much better mother to you if I worked, because I'd have these two outlets and I'd enjoy being with you when I was with you. And I think that allowed me to feel that and to own that feeling and to enjoy it, that I know I can, my kids have the best of all worlds now because they have me for several hours a day, but they also have the great joy of someone else with great energy who can bring them care and love and world outlook and perspective, and that be a nanny or that be a nursery. And so I think children do tune the mind as to whether you're in the right career for you at the right moment and whether you're dedicating enough time and balance to either. I also think what having children did was made me really understand that you can step out of the game for a moment and be confident with that. I'm very thankful to Bloomberg that they have such incredible parental leave. And even as an American, you know, in America, people don't have any care, don't have any parental leave as by law, but our company has an ethos that we get 6 months paid leave even in America, which is sort of unheard of. And so I've taken that on both opportunities. And at the beginning, it's great insecurity with which you leave your job, thinking, oh goodness, think of all the people who, you know, could replace me, and they're not going to miss me at all. And particularly my first child, I came I didn't have a certain role that I was doing. I'd actually ironically been filling in for someone else's maternity leave and had then become pregnant, not entirely planned, and then sort of felt, you know, desperate as to where I was going to go, and this was the wrong juncture and not the right time. And actually, I think that maternity leave really taught me that there is never a right time and there's never a wrong time. And I was able to then be out of the working world for 6 months and realize things don't change as quickly as you think, and your value is still there and you are missed, but also time flies and you get back to the office and everyone's like, goodness, has it really been 6 months? And you're thinking, yes, it has been. Have you not missed me so much for this amount of time? But, you know, life goes on. And actually I ended up getting the career break I was desperate for after coming back from a child. And I thought that was wonderful. This company really does show that you can be a mother and your career will still continue to escalate. I then became the anchor that I was always dreaming of being, and moving to New York with my first child. And then when I had my second child, my boss was like, this is wonderful. Please tell everyone about the length of time you're going to take, because we want everyone else to take that 6 months and know that they can come back and their job will be safe and you can be a real, you know, role model for others, even though I'm careful to use that word because there are so many more role models above me. But I think that was something really important to me, to showing that you could have at that moment this time out of the working world and still come back and have all the opportunities still there for you, and actually realize that you being on maternity leave creates opportunities for others. I went away, someone filled in for me, in the same way that I got my first break by filling in for someone else's maternity leave. And so I think just like understanding that this is a virtuous circle and not a vicious one. And I hope that that can be the case at other companies and in other industries, because I've certainly found it myself.
No, absolutely. And actually that links back really nicely to what you said earlier about how other people's success doesn't have to be a detriment to your success. Especially in women, I feel like we are, you know, put against each other a little bit maybe, but actually it's working together and the opportunities and, you know, even taking the 6 months maternity leave can give more women, you know, hope and also the confidence to leave and then come back and continue their careers, rather than feeling that they have to make a choice, which has been common in the past. And that links on really nicely, I suppose, to my final question. So looking back, what advice would you give to your former self, or what do you wish you'd maybe started earlier? And what would you thank your former self for doing?
I'd thank my former self for perhaps that naivety and gung-ho attitude of sending emails to people that I'm sure perhaps weren't expecting it. And I think taking risks when I didn't really realise they were risks. So I think allow yourself to have that naivety. In reverse, I wish I'd known about networking and understanding the importance of networking and going out there and asking anyone for coffees, anyone for advice, because no matter, even if they're lateral to you or higher to you in a different industry or doing something totally different, you can learn from absolutely everybody. Some piece of advice, some idea, what they do to relax, how they've fulfilled themselves, how they get balance, how they don't have regrets, how they don't beat themselves up about a silly question they asked on air and then be able to move on from it. I think I wish I'd networked more, but I'm thankful that I was perhaps a little bit naive. And I'm thankful that I always valued friendship. And I think, because that's what gets you everywhere in this year of 2020 to 2021, knowing that you've got people that you can laugh with. And I'm so glad that I have that at work and that I have that in my home life, both over in America and in the UK. And those support systems, I think, have been integral. So I'm really glad that I've very fortunately always valued friendship and never lost that, even though we're all working beyond hard and trying to better ourselves in whatever way, shape or form.
Wonderful. Caroline, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak to us today. It's been a really interesting chat.
I want to thank you so much. And you're always a joy to speak to. And I love listening to the podcast. I think what you do is so important. So keep on doing it. And good luck to everyone out there who's doing an MBA.
We hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. Please follow or subscribe to the Imperial Business Podcast across Spotify or Apple, and we will be back with the next episode in 2 weeks' time. If you'd like to find out more or join the Imperial MBA Women Network, connect with us on LinkedIn or Instagram. See you then.